Tom Hartman talks tonight at 8. Right now, you're listening to the Pat Thurston Show on Sonoma County's news station, News Talk 1350, KSRO.
And welcome back to the show. George Bright sitting in for Pat Thurston again today. And, well, we've got an interesting hour coming up, part of a continuing series of stories that I like to tell about the Brewers of Wine Country. Now, that may not make much sense to you, and even if you're a longtime Sonoma County resident, you may not realize that besides having some of the best wines in the world, we also have some of the best brews here in the world. We've got a number of brewers who are literally world-class. I'm happy to have one here with me today, though I'm sure he'll deny that he's world-class. And in the high-end beer snob community, many of the beers produced right here in Sonoma County are considered some of the best in the United States. So with me today is Brian Hudson from Moonlight Brewing. Brian Hudson. the other Brian.
Yeah, the other.
I'm drawing a total. Brian Hunt. I'm sorry. From Moonlight Brewing, right here out in Fulton, really, just outside of Santa Rosa.
No, west of Santa Rosa. Yeah, PO box in Fulton is a cute little post office.
So basically, you operate. Now, this is not a name. Moonlight Brewing is not a name that most of our listeners will recognize, because you don't bottle, you don't have your beers in any stores, and you also don't have a brew pub. I mean, like many of the areas around here, they go to the Bear Republic Brew Pub, but we can't go to a brew pub and see Moonlight Brewing.
No, you go to a separate pub and get it by the glass.
And of course, I suspect that you will recognize one of the signature brews out of Moonlight Brewing, and that is Death and Taxes. Most people, you say Moonlight Brewing, they go, well, I don't know. But if you say Death and Taxes, the response is, oh, yeah, I've had that. That's very good. Well, I'm very happy to have Brian Hunt here on the show today. Brian, welcome.
Thank you.
Let's start talking about your operation, because you actually have a very different operation than a lot of brewers around here. You kind of run a small little shop using rather antiquated equipment, is that correct?
Not so much antiquated anymore, but very small. I would completely agree with that. It's just myself. I pretty much do everything from delivering the beer and making the beer, paperwork, all sorts of stuff like that, and it's just a lot of work.
So it is truly a one-man show.
That's right.
So, some of the areas of interest, you are kind of different from brewers in a lot of ways. Most small American craft brewers specialize in brewing ales. And most of the stuff that you brew is a lager. Now, to someone who doesn't know much about beer one way or the other, if they were, to them, beer is go to Safeway, buy Miller. What is the difference between an ale and a lager?
Let's give a little history first. How it was known in California up till about 10 years ago is if it was called beer, mm-hmm. it had to be under 5% by volume alcohol, mm-hmm. and generally was rather light and boring. And the law changed that basically beer can be anything up to any alcohol amount, and if it's over 5.7%, you recognize it as such. So a lot of the German beers or other more famous European lager styles that had a little more alcohol that had to be called malt liquor or even Rainier Ale, the Green Death, for those that grew up around here, mm-hmm. That was called an ale not because it was fermented like an ale, but because it had more alcohol. So it's not a true ale. But that's what a lot of people are thinking of, is back lager or beer, I mean. Mm-hmm. Beer was known to be a low-alcohol product in comparison. Ale doesn't have to be stronger. More often it is. Now, down to the reality of things. As a very simple difference, I describe lagers and ales just like white wines and red wines. That's something most everybody in this county knows about. White wines are fermented cooler. Not everybody knows that, but they do know white wines tend to be fruitier and crisper and more refreshing. Mm-hmm. Red wines, in contrast, happen to be fermented warmer. The warmer fermentation gives a rounder, more full, more robust, more flavorful type of beverage. Same thing is true in beer. The same exact difference is the cooler fermentations are slower and more delicate. You get a more delicate beer with a cold fermentation. That's mm-hmm. a lager. Lager, the way you remember, it's the German styles. Germans, you think of snow. They have a lot of colder weather there.
Right, we think of Oktoberfest with those giant mugs of foaming yellow beer.
Yeah, that sounds good. But in contrast, ales are traditionally from Britain. In Britain, you don't think of lots of snow. You think of it's always foggy and cold. Not really cold, just in the 50s mm-hmm. Fahrenheit. Of course, they wouldn't use Fahrenheit, but if they did, it would be in the 50s.
Much like it is outside today.
Pretty much, and that makes great ales. That's wonderful for ales. Ales are more full and robust and more flavor, more things going on.
So in ales, the yeast like a warmer temperature, relatively speaking.
Exactly. At Californians versus Alaskans. It's kind of that sort of thing.
And so, now, as I was saying, most of the craft brewers in the United States brew ales, which I guess is kind of the trendy, and it has been for quite a while, the trendy beer to be brewing.
To a point, yeah, because a lot of small brewers and home brewers as well want to be as far away from the mainstream beverage as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And the farthest you can get from Bud Miller Coors is something with so much more flavor and color, and generally the biggest difference, therefore, would be an ale, more full and robust. A couple other reasons why that is. One is ales are generally easier to make. They take less aging time, less equipment, and it's just simpler. You can be a little looser with things if there's so much more flavor from the ingredients. You don't have to be quite so on top of things. Not that that's bad or good. It's just it makes a different style. And so easy is good, especially if you're starting a small brewery. That's plenty of issues and things to deal with on its own.
Well, and I'm thinking, right, don't lagers, normally you brew a lager at, like, near freezing temperatures. I mean, relatively cold.
Relatively cold. I like mine in the low 50s.
Which means, though, that you need refrigeration equipment and a lot more complex stuff.
Oh, yes, there's a lot more refrigeration, a lot more stainless steel tanks, and all those come at some, shall we say, cost.
And so it's actually easier and cheaper to be brewing ales than it is to be brewing lagers.
Exactly.
Not to mention the fact that, there are large breweries in, like, St. Louis, for example, that, brew lagers by the metric kiloton. That's kind of at a bigger batch on an industrial level. And the craft brewers are getting away from that.
Yeah, there's another reason why ales are more prevalent in microbreweries as well. Certainly, ease, convenience, cost is a huge part of it. But also, most of the people who started in home brewing or started to learn the trade read mm-hmm. books that were written in English. Strange concept, but most of those were written by Brits. And it's been more difficult for people to learn German styles or European styles from languages that they don't perhaps natively speak.
That's a very good point, and I know a little bit later we're going to be talking about Pilsners, which come from the town of Pilsen.
That's right.
And that's in Czechoslovakia. So that is, obviously any beer-making manual written in Czech, it's very unlikely that I'm going to understand how to do that.
I can suffer through German and get the gist of it. Czech, I don't even know where to start.
Why don't we take a step back and kind of introduce where your background is? Because you actually went to college to learn to be a brewer.
Well, originally I went to college to learn biochemistry, and then I realized that was a huge mistake. That's what all the pre-meds were taking when mm-hmm. I was at UC San Diego. So I transferred up to be a winemaker at UC Davis and got in the program and ended up working in a brewing lab and found that, the winemaking folks were not as casual as I preferred. And making beer was a whole lot of fun, and drinking beer was rather enjoyable as well. I didn't have to use as many, let's say, tuned words. I could just be a normal person and drink beer.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed like you had to take on a slightly different aura to be in the wine circles where I was learning.
So UC Davis actually has a course in wine and or beer making?
Well, there's a program in winemaking called the Viticulture and Oenology, or just the oenology is the chemistry of it. Viticulture is the growing of grapes, just like agriculture. Viticulture is growing mm-hmm. of things. And in the food science department, there's classes in making beer. And there's a whole lot of things, of course, that overlap. A lot of chemistry, a lot of microbiology, food science, things I hate to even try to remember.
Well, and one of the primary ingredients that is in common between wine and beer is obviously yeast.
Oh, yeah. Yes, they are. They both have that.
And so I'm assuming that the process is somewhat similar between the two?
Yes. Yeah, you could say that. Uh-huh.
So, because I'm thinking that with all of the winemakers here in Sonoma County, is there any kind of overlap between those skill sets, or is it a completely separated community?
Well, we do drink each other's products, as far as I know.
That's true. All right, well, why don't we take a break now, and we come back. Tiny's looking at me like, no, we're not ready to take a break yet. We're checking to see if we've got traffic reports. In the meantime, why don't we touch a little bit on... let's talk about... Okay. So, we will take a break. When we come back, we're going to continue talking with Brian Hunt about brewing here in Sonoma County, and more specifically about the brews that are coming out of Moonlight Brewing. You're listening to George Bright on News Talk 1350 KSRO.
You know, the night's magic seemed to whisper and hush. You know, the soft moonlight finished. Can I just have one more morning dance with you, my love?
Right now, you're listening to the Pat Thurston Show on Sonoma County's news station, News Talk 1350, KSRO.
And welcome back. George Bright sitting in for Pat Thurston today. Pat is out with, well, we're hoping it's not a bad flu, but I'm thinking she'll be back tomorrow. She is on the mend, certainly. We are talking here with one of Sonoma County's premier brewers, probably in a brewery that you've never heard of before, because he doesn't have a bottles in the stores. He doesn't have a brew pub that you can go visit. It's available in many different restaurants, and we'll talk about that in a bit. I'm sitting here with Brian Hunt of Moonlight Brewing. Brian, welcome back to the show.
And thank you.
We were talking before about UC Davis and learning about the differences between winemaking and beer making. And the one major ingredient that's the same is the yeast.
That's right.
Now, are there different kinds of yeast? I mean, do they use like a different yeast for wine than they do for beer, or is it pretty much all the same?
Yes, you generally use different kinds, but they all overlap as well. You can take a winemaking yeast and use it for brewing. You can take some brewing yeast and use them for making wine. You can take some yeast that really don't belong anywhere and make beer out of them. A lot of wines are made with whatever's just naturally on the grapes. And it's not like you add something.
Brewers, so it's not like bread where you add yeast to the bread. Sometimes you just crush up the grapes and it turns into wine?
Well, sometimes it's more like sourdough starter, where you just take whatever's in the air that naturally seems to make the flour and water go, and you get the right ingredients and the right match, and only certain creatures will decide to live there.
I would think that if that were the case, then that there may be like regional variations in yeasts, that there's a local, you know, variety that makes a certain flavor.
That's true if you consider what's naturally in the environment, in the air or on the flowers or in the fruit, things
mm-hmm.
like that.
Mm-hmm.
Most people get fresh cultures, especially brewing. It's really critical. Beer will spoil so much simpler or so much easier if you don't have just the proper creatures and if you have the wrong creatures. Wine's much more of a preservative, so if you get other creatures in there, the alcohol will kill them, or the pH, that's the acidity,
right,
will kill off the creatures you don't want, a lot of them. Beer is a little more fragile that way.
So, right, because wine is kind of, I've always thought wine was sort of halfway to vinegar, and nothing grows in vinegar. So it's a little harder to have anything grow in wine.
You could say that.
So, well, if yeast is in some ways the most, well, certainly the only live ingredient, what are the other ingredients in beer?
Well, malt is considered the soul of beer.
Mm-hmm.
I like that description. It gives the body, the color, and a lot of the rich flavors. Pretty much if it's a rich flavor and hearty flavor, mostly it's from the malt. And then, of course, there's the hops, which most people consider, most people don't know really what a hop is. Few people have ever seen them before. And they're cute little green things. They're basically kind of like a cross between a pine cone and an artichoke. About the size of the end of your thumb. Thumb, actually, is what I was thinking of. Some people have big thumbs, some smaller thumbs, and that's about the size range you have.
Hmm.
But they look like a flower, look like a light green flower. And it's just kind of impossible to describe them. And then the smell is just out of this world. It's just a delicious herbal scent.
And what people may not realize is that prior to Prohibition, Sonoma County was very big into hop growing.
That's right.
That hops were actually one of our largest, if not the largest, agricultural crops in Sonoma County.
Yeah, you've heard of the town of Hopland, I think. Even Mendocino County got into the deal somehow.
Well, and there's a winery just north of here called Hop Kiln.
That's true. Martinelli Winery there on River Road. That's old Hop Kilns.
Right. So obviously, hops were a very important part. And interestingly, I know quite a bit about my Sonoma County history. In the 1920s, during Prohibition, there was a loophole which allowed for home winemaking. And so beer was outlawed, distilled liquors were outlawed, but you were allowed to make something like 5 gallons of wine at home. And during the 1920s, they pulled out just acres and acres and acres of hop yards. And they're called hop yards, right?
Hop yards, that's right.
Like vine yards for vineyards,
that's
they're
right.
Hop yards. They pulled out acres of hop yards and replaced them with acres of vineyards
so
they could grow grapes to ship to people to make their own wine at home. So there was actually a loophole in Prohibition. People actually did drink during Prohibition. But Prohibition had a huge effect on breweries in general.
That's true. And there was a lot of hops still grown in the U.S. during Prohibition. They were a great export product because luckily we weren't the only country that had Prohibition. Other countries were quite thirsty for American hops. We had very high technology hops, very, very good quality hops back then compared to a lot of parts of the world.
And nowadays, I mean, a lot of the hops that are grown in the Pacific Northwest have a very distinct character compared to, let's say, European hops.
That's right. Certain ones are grown here based on the climate, especially the warmth allows for specific characters, higher alpha acid, some people would call it, and also the demand here. People like more flavorful and more say in your face kind of hop flavors.
And as a good example, if you are a drinker of local beers, I think Lagunitas IPA is a very good example. If you've ever had a Lagunitas India Pale Ale, you know what hops taste like.
Yes, that's right. And you can go one step further, even to Pliny the Elder, if you want severe hops over at Russian River. That's one of the hoppiest beers here in the North Bay. And Bear Republic, their Racer 5 IPA is known to be very hoppy.
Right. The IPAs in general, India Pale Ales, tend to be very strong in the hop characteristic.
That's part of what makes it an IPA,
And
yes.
There are quite a few very distinctive IPAs here in Northern California. I mean, I'm thinking Anderson Valley Hop Otten IPA is also a very, and Pliny is telling me bitter is the word that he'd use to describe it, bitter but still very good. And so that bittering taste is really is what you call hops. Or comes from the hops.
Well, hops can give very many different characters, and the first one's bittering.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, like some herbs, if you boil them a long time, they become more bitter. And if you use them just right at the end, the hops are used during the boil for the most part, and when the beer is boiled. It sounds odd for people, but all beer is boiled as part of the process before fermentation. But hops are used in the boil most of the time, and if you throw them in early, they become bitter. If you throw them in late, they don't have enough chance to boil and become bitter, but you get the aromatics and the floral characters and some fruit characters, and just the herbaceousness of it is only possible right at the end of boil, where you're not boiling those things away. It's like cooking with fresh basil.
Yes.
You then simmer it for 20 minutes, half an hour. You've lost a lot of it. You put it right in at the end, something like that, and you get all the good fresh characters.
Well, and the other major ingredient in beer is malt. Why don't we talk a bit about, first of all, what is malt, and what are the different kinds of malts?
Well, some people think malt comes from malted milk balls. I happen to like those, but no. Malt is actually malted barley, and people going, well, what's malted mean? Other grains can be malted besides. What malting means is it's a way to help the seed make easy work for the brewers.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much chemistry your readers will understand, but I'll do my best. Grain is all starch. And starch is a whole bunch of sugar molecules all squeezed together real tightly. And that's why you eat a piece of bread and it doesn't affect you immediately, or starch, but it does give you energy over the long run.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas you eat something sweet and you get the energy immediately, because it takes time for your body to break down the starch into sugars.
So, simple and complex sugars,
I think. Right. Yeah. And the yeast eats sugars. That's pretty much all they can do. They don't have teeth. They're much, much smaller than that. So if you feed them starch, they just look at you and go, well, we're still hungry. Well, I assume they look at me.
Right.
So you want sugars. Now, winemakers are lazy in the sense they just step on the grapes or do whatever mechanical versions of that, and the sugar's right there. We have to cook the grain and get that out. So malting is a beginning of getting the sugars out of that complex carbohydrate of barley, or even wheat. So what happens in the malt house, most brewers don't do this, nearly all of us buy them already done.
Mm-hmm.
The barley is sprouted, and the barley seed thinks, ha, it's springtime, it's warm and moist. It gets all excited, and it starts sprouting, and in that process, it starts to break itself down. Now, the reason there's all this starch in a barley seed is, just like an egg, a chicken egg, all the stuff in there is food for the plant as it starts to grow,
mm-hmm.
before it reaches the sunlight. It needs to have enough food value to grow.
And energy stored in the form of carbohydrate.
Exactly. So a malter would trick the barley plant into thinking it's time to grow. So it produces enzymes which start to break itself down, breaking its own starch into sugars.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as it starts to do this and their old enzymes are ready, we dry it. Or the maltsters dry it, and the plant dies, but all those enzymes are there, ready to break the starch into sugars. We just kind of take it from there when I make the beer, or brewers make beer, We heat it up, and those enzymes are already right there, and that's what converts the starches into sugars.
So you're using the natural process, which is a part of probably any seed.
It's germination, that's right.
To convert the long, complex carbohydrates into simple sugars, which is the only thing that yeasts know how to eat.
Exactly.
Well, and we've only got about 30 seconds here, so...
Well, let me finish then. Malting, so it's basically sprouting. And then roasting, because you don't want this wet, sloppy mess. You need it dry and a little bit of toasted flavor. So you get from the roasting of malts. You can roast them darker or lighter, depending on, just like a piece of bread in your toaster. You crank it up, you get dark bread, dark toast. In the case of a malt house, they'll crank it up if you want dark malt, which would give you dark beers.
I think we'll continue talking about malting when we come back, because toasting's pretty important. You're listening to Brian Hunt from Moonlight Brewing, and this is News Talk 1350 KSRO.
KSRO News, CNN News, always keeping you informed. Sonoma County's news station, News Talk 1350, KSRO. Overnight developments on Sonoma County's top stories, plus the latest from around the world. The KSRO Morning News, weekdays 5:30 to 9 on News Talk 1350, KSRO.
And welcome back to the show. George Bright sitting in for Pat Thurston today. Another episode of the Brewers of Wine Country. And I think it's really important for people around Sonoma County to know that even though we consider this wine country, this is also the home of some real world-class beers and some world-class brewers and breweries. And with me today is Brian Hudson from Moonlight Brewing. Brian Hudson, once again, Brian Hunt. Brian Hudson is our producer, is our program manager, and so it's automatic when I say that here in the radio station. Brian Hunt from Moonlight Brewing, right here in Sonoma County, and he is kind of out towards Fulton. He's just to the west of Santa Rosa. And Brian, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
From now on, I'm just going to call you Brian. How's that sound?
That'll work.
When we left off at the commercial break, we were talking about malt. And how it was basically a way to get the grain to make the sugar so that the yeast had something to eat.
Exactly.
I guess quick question first, what happens when the yeast eats sugar?
Oh, then they make alcohol and carbon dioxide bubbles.
So the fizz in the beer and the alcohol in the beer come from yeast.
Yeah. Obvious, pretty useful creatures.
Obvious question, but somebody had to ask it.
Yeah.
On malts, though, when you're talking about, first of all, barley, but you can actually malt any grain. Malting is a process, right?
A lot of grains you can. Wheat's often done, rye sometimes done. After that, that's pretty much the extent of it, maybe occasionally oats. But for the most part, barley's the best one to make into beer.
And actually, there are some rye beers around. I mean, That Bear Republic makes a rye beer, which is quite good.
Yeah, it's not 100% rye, but
no.
It's a large portion.
So, So in other words, you can actually mix the different kinds of malts. You can have both barley malt and rye malt. So we're really talking about, ingredients in a recipe here. This isn't like, there's only four ingredients, so every beer is going to taste exactly the same. Every ingredient in different levels, different stuff. But with malting, I guess there is different. You're talking about roasting malt.
Yep.
And how does that work? I mean, what's the end product there?
Okay, you want to, first of all, when you're malting, it's last thing before you dry it is it's all wet and sloppy, and that's going to mold and not be kept very well. So you have to dry it at least, and to make a light beer, you just dry it enough so it's dry, and you can bag it up and keep it for a year. But you can then, just like a piece of bread in your toaster, you crank your toaster up, you get all those different toasted flavors all the way up to burned and black.
So all the way from golden through light brown through brown through
black. reddish colors and
And this is all a result of literally a toasting process.
Exactly.
And what kind of effect does that have in the beer that you use? I mean, I assume different malts make different beers.
Well, absolutely. And the first thing you look at is, even if you're making a very dark beer, it's not 100% dark malt. At most, let's say it's 20%, 10% of is even a good number for different colored malts. So it's not the majority of the beer. But first thing you see is you get color. If you have dark malts, you throw them in, you're going to get something in the way of a darker beer. And then, of course, once you get to smell it, you can smell more malty flavors, just like you smell a piece of toast. Mm-hmm. Well, you burn a piece of toast, you can smell it all through the house. It's kind of like that as well for the really dark malts. But after then the smell, then you taste it, and you have all those rich roasted flavors. And you can caramel flavors, too, depending how the malts are roasted. If you have a red-colored beer, a beer with any sort of redness, mm-hmm. nearly always that's from malt that's been caramelized. And because that caramelized is then fermented, it's not like it will always be sweet. Generally, it'd be slightly sweeter in some different kinds of sugars that the mm-hmm. yeast won't eat. But and still tastes sweet to you, but generally it'll add a smoothness, if not a sweetness, if it's a red-colored beer.
I know as a cook that the amount of caramelization really brings out flavor.
Oh, yes.
And so caramelizing malts obviously adds more flavor to a beer as well.
That's right.
So, obviously, the darker the malt, the darker the beer.
Yep.
And so I'm assuming then that stouts, I mean, everybody knows like Guinness is a jet black beer. That's probably made from dark roasted malts.
A lot of dark roasted malts and also barley that's never even been malted. It's just flat out roasted barley. Roasted barley is one significant things about Guinness. It gives it a particular dry character and makes it even a thicker head.
Interesting. So, I guess why don't we talk about different styles of beer? Because this is really, I mean, the malt is kind of the beginning of how you define what style you end up with, correct?
That's a lot of it.
What are the different general styles of beer? I mean, there are probably dozens and dozens, aren't there?
Oh, yes, sir. Basically, you go to any brewery and there's going to be slightly different style. It's just a particular personal bent. And then from that, you go to like any city. Not so much here. We've become so homogenous in this country. Well, the West Coast is still pretty different and the Northwest is different. But let's say in Europe, you go to a different city and every different city will have a different bent on what they want their style to be. Even so far as you say a Munich-style beer, well, that's from the town of Munich.
Oh.
Or Dortmunder comes from Dortmund. Or mm-hmm. a Kölsch comes from Cologne. So there's a particular style often from a city or from a region.
So, and I'm thinking an analog here in the United States is barbecue, that you go to different places in the country and you get very different things that they call barbecue.
Right.
And so beer is the same way, that on a really a small regional level it differs.
Well, any cook cooks anything slightly different, I suspect, and no one follows Joy of Cooking right to the T and will taste like the next person that follows Joy of Cooking right to the T.
So why don't we talk some about your beers and the beers okay. that Moonlight Brewing has to offer. I think the beer that most people will know Moonlight for is Death and Taxes.
That's right.
Which, since it's black, I'm assuming it's a stout of some sort?
No, I tell people it's a miserable stout and a lame porter. Porters are another dark ale that people know much about. And the reason I say that is because the Death and Taxes is made with a lager yeast. We talked earlier about lagers and ales.
Mm-hmm.
Lagers, just like white wine, is more cleaner and crisper and more refreshing, whereas ales, like red wine, is more full and robust. So the Death and Taxes is more clean and black. It's not full and heavy. Some people describe Guinness or other dark stouts like a meal in a glass or beef stew in a glass. Death and Taxes isn't like that. It's more like iced coffee with a different effect. It's not quite the caffeine high. It's slightly different, of course.
Yes, but I mean, it's a very light beer, even though it's very dark.
That's very deceptive. When people first see it, they're very afraid, and they try and go, yeah, that's good.
And so if it's not a stout, what is the style, or is there a style name for it?
Oh, it's a black lager. That's basically the most descriptive thing it is. There's a Japanese style that make black lagers, and they are closest, as far as I know, that the beers I've tasted to what I make. It's mm-hmm. not that I'm trying to follow a Japanese style. The German dark lagers tend to have a little more caramel, a little more sweetness, a little more body than what I like. There's no caramels, there's no sweetness at all in this beer. Just like I described as iced coffee, there's no sweetness in coffee unless you choose to add it.
Right. So it's kind of more dry? Is that how do
you describe it? Yes, it's dry and refreshing.
So, and, you know, the other area where, I mean, I certainly think is one of your best beers is actually what many people would consider a straight-up lager, which is your reality check. It's a Pilsner.
Right.
And in some ways, I mean, this is kind of a purist's beer.
Yes, I often try to not follow beer styles just because I don't want to feel that, you know, one needs to do something that's been made for hundreds of years in some country thousands of miles away or kilometers away, make something that makes more sense here. You know, we eat tacos in this country,
mm-hmm.
and where else in the world do you have German beers and you eat tacos? Well, in Central America or Mexico, but we have so much different, the different weather here. Obviously, there's weather reports. We hear it earlier. It's rainy and cold, and you're eating tacos. And where else in the world does this happen? You need a beer to match that. You don't just take a beer from Bavaria where it's snowing and you're eating rouladen or, you know, stuffed pigs. That's not what our culture is like here and our cuisine and our weather. So I tried to make something that fits exactly what we have here in this county that's special. But the reality check style Pilsner is one where I went to the Czech Republic thinking, I'd like to see what these Pilsners are about. And I went to the town of Pilsen, where Pilsner Kale is from.
Mm-hmm.
Pilsner Kale means the original Pilsner. And many people try to copy that style, of course, around the world. And I thought Pilsners would just be real boring, light beers. Oh, I was so delightfully mistaken. Oh, they're just so delicious and wonderful. It's just, you sit with this glass and just your brain opens up and all these flowers come out, and it's just, it's indescribable. If you have a chance to go to the Czech Republic, and Prague is a wonderful town and affordable. I have to tell you, when I was there just a couple years ago, the expensive places, it was a full euro, which is about a dollar for a half liter of beer. That's about a pint.
Wow.
So the expensive places figure a dollar for a pint of beer.
So basically, Pilsner is a true, you know, lager beer, what we think of as the light beer. When we come back, we're going to continue talking about this, and finally, we're going to get to sample some of this beer. Brian's been nice enough to bring one of his brews, and we're going to talk about seasonal brews, which is, I think, one of the most fascinating things that separates beer from wine. You're listening to George Bright, filling in for Pat Thurston today on News Talk 1350 KSRO.
Talks tonight at 8. Right now, you're listening to the Pat Thurston Show on Sonoma County's news station, News Talk 1350, KSRO.
Welcome back to the show. George Bright sitting in for Pat Thurston today. We are doing another installment of the Brewers of Wine Country. With me today is Brian Hunt from Moonlight Brewing. Got a big smile from Brian for being able to get his name right. We are talking about the art of brewmaking, of beer making. And when we left off, we were talking about your Reality Check Pilsner,
right,
which is, I think, just this incredibly clean Pilsner. Now, there's one more ingredient about beer that we haven't yet talked about.
Water. And most people don't think about it, but beer is 95% water. There's more water by percent weight in a tomato than there is in beer.
Wow.
Because you consider the alcohol, it's kind of a trick statement,
right.
But the major ingredient is obviously water, so water affects it. You drink a glass of water, I mean, people know the difference between Calistoga water or all the different soda waters.
Sure.
They have to have it from a particular glacier in another continent because it tastes different. Well, imagine if beer is 95% water, how much difference the different waters are going to take in the beer.
And so did you actually, like, go to some effort to copy the Pilsner water?
Oh, absolutely. It's probably the most expensive beer I make because I remove all the minerals out of the water. That's the specialty about Pilsner water. Pilsner Urquell, or not Pilsner Urquell, the town of Pilsen, Czech Republic,
mm-hmm.
has very nearly pure water, pure in the sense of no minerals.
Ah.
And the minerals, just like you salt foods, they change the character of the food. All the different salts, calcium, magnesium, all the sulfates, the chlorides, all those things affect the character of the beer much the way, like I said, salting food does. And so you take all those things out, and your turkey stuffing won't taste like much without salt, but the beer will take on a whole different set of flavors. And it's incredible. The first time I came back from the Czech Republic and realized, I want to make some of this stuff because it was really good. I removed the minerals from the water, a very expensive process. And I made the same recipe as my Lunatic Lager just to see what happens. And all the flavors were different. The malt flavors came out different, even though the same malt. The hop flavors were different. The mouthfeel was different. I was shocked how much difference that made.
While you were talking, I just took a sip, and I don't know if you see, I just said, wow. So why don't we talk about the beer you brought in today? One of the things I find interesting about brewing versus winemaking is that brewing is a much shorter cycle, that you can have a beer from the time you start cooking to the time you can drink it out of a mug is...
I consider 3 weeks, but I've seen beer out the door in 5 days. That's kind of... so, grates me a little, but I've seen it happen.
All right, 3 weeks. And so that means that you can actually brew beer like at different times of year for different purposes.
That's right.
And I mean, one of my favorite things is the Christmas, what we call seasonal beers. Mm-hmm. And so we're now in the time where, as a beer lover, I'm very, very happy because there's all these wonderful seasonal Christmas beers out. And you brought with you a Christmas beer.
Yep, Santa's Tipple Ale. Tipple not being triple, it's tipple like the British word, like a tippler. It was named after a beer I loved in southern England called Bishop's Tipple, mm-hmm. something I could think of stoically drinking after the Sunday service that a week of church business was well taken care of.
And this is a nice dark beer. I mean, for those of you who don't have pictures on your radio, it
Let's
is a
hold it closer to the microphone.
A nice dark beer with a rather thick tannish head, and the nose is very roasted. Obviously, you're using a lot of roasted malts in here.
Exactly. That's what I wanted. I want something warming. Now, a lot of holiday beers are very strong in alcohol and very rich and hearty.
Mm-hmm.
And when there's 5 feet of snow outside, 10 feet of snow, I think a little more alcohol is appropriate. But it's just kind of drizzly rain outside. We don't really need that here.
Well, for California, this is what we'd consider winter.
Yes, that's right.
And actually, there is a style known as a winter warmer.
That's right.
Now, is this spiced at all? I know a lot of winter ales are spiced.
No, I don't believe in that. I love my pumpkin pie with all those same spices, but I like that in the pie, and I like my beer without spices.
So this is just a nice, dark, rich malt, and all of those flavors then are coming from either the malt or the yeast's interaction with that
That's
malt.
Right. And, of course, the hops do play a part more subtly in here because it's the malt that I'm trying to showcase in this beer.
Well, obviously, since I didn't even think of the hops as I was talking about it. And you actually, interestingly, brew a New Year's beer as well.
That's right. The Toast. Toast, as full name is Toast Slightly Burned. Strong lager.
Mm-hmm. And how does that differ from this?
Night and day. I guess by color that would be true as well. This is an ale. I wouldn't yet call it a stout. I don't think it's hardy enough to be a stout. I do call it a dark ale. But the toast I make is a lager. And mm-hmm. basically I take all the malts, I use about 12 different malts and all different degrees of toastedness. And what I try to accomplish is something that basically tastes like toast.
So I guess you're basically acting as a cook and adjusting a recipe to get the flavors and textures that you want.
I hope everyone would do that.
I mean, this is where I think the craft making of beer really comes out, is that you're not brewing, you know, a million gallon batch of fizzy yellow water. And in this case, you make rather small batches of very highly personable beer.
That's right. I believe in making it taste like something. I make these beers. I drink these beers. These beers help me buy my groceries. There's no corporate office telling me what to do. I don't even have an accountant telling me what to do. I tell the accountant what to do. And that's the way every brewery ought to be, run by a brewer for the brewer's taste, not run by an accountant.
Right, and obviously, since you run a rather small operation, it kind of gives you some latitude to be more creative. Because you don't have to make the same thing that was popular last year.
Right. Plus, I don't like being bored.
So most people call that attention deficit disorder.
You could call it that.
Now, one thing I did want to touch on, anybody who's listening and is interested in trying either, now this is Santa's Tipple, but trying any of the Moonlight Brews, since you don't have a brew pub and since they can't buy a bottle in the store, where can they have your beer?
Well, they can buy kegs of it from your favorite liquor store. I generally deal with Bottle Barn, but any liquor store here in the county can get my beers if they contact me. Again, only in kegs.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, there's probably a good dozen places here in the county, from a couple in Guerneville and Healdsburg, of course, over the hill in Calistoga, Cotati, a few good places, and Petaluma. They can either call the brewery, and I can help them out finding a good place, or whatever else works.
So you basically only distribute in kegs then.
That's
and it's
right.
Either kegs for sale to end users or kegs to bars or restaurants.
Serving by the glass, yeah.
I'm not giving a plug, but I mean, one of my favorite restaurants, which I go to specifically for Moonlight, and this will tickle you, is in downtown, called a place called Flavor.
That's
and
right.
They often have a half dozen of your beers on tap.
They have six or seven of my beers on tap.
And would they have Santa's Tipple?
There's a keg waiting to go on as soon as the Bony Fingers, which is my Halloween beer. As soon as the Bony Fingers is gone, it may be gone by today, the Santa's Tipple will be on next.
And so that is yet another seasonal beer that you make for Halloween.
Yeah.
So literally every 3 or 4 weeks you can come out with a different seasonal beer.
That's right. I don't make an Oktoberfest beer. I'm not German, but I do celebrate Halloween, and to me that's worthy of a beer.
I would say, and unfortunately, I haven't yet had a chance to try your bony fingers, but I've been hearing nothing but good things about it.
Now, you do know what happens when you work your fingers to the bone, right?
No.
Oh, you're in the music business. You get bony fingers.
Oh. And I don't. Now, you know, one thing, we've got a couple of minutes left. I had heard about an experiment that you were trying, and I don't know if this ever made it to fruition, no pun intended. But you're actually kind of, you know, crossing style boundaries and mixing wine with beer. Is this right?
Oh, technically mixing grapes with beer. You could call it a fruit wine. I have a blend that's Pinot Noir and Death and Taxes, and it's pretty outrageous. I haven't released it yet. I just am drinking it all myself.
So, and basically, you throw the grapes in during the brewing process?
Yes.
And so that provides more sugar for the yeast to eat.
That's true, but most importantly, it's a flavor. It's that depth of character of the Pinot and the depth of character of the Death and Taxes, the black roastedness. I want those two flavors right side by side, right at the same intensity. So one sip, you go, oh, the fruit. The next sip, you go, oh, the malts. And back and forth.
So, again, a complex recipe that brings out a number of different tastes.
That's right.
I think if there's one thing that our listeners can take away from this is that most beer, or many beers, are not fizzy, yellow, one-dimensional beer, like what they may be used to from buying at the supermarket, but can actually be a very complex group of flavorings, group of colorings, and different bitterings, and a lot of very floral flavors.
That's right.
So there's actually a whole lot more to beer out there than just a white head of foam over a glass of yellow liquid.
Oh, absolutely.
Brian, I want to thank you for coming in today. It was a pleasure. I'll admit it was just an excuse. I wanted to be able to have some of your Moonlight beer here on tap. You're able to find Moonlight Brews in many places around Sonoma County. If your local bar or restaurant does not carry it, you can call the Moonlight Brewery.
Or go to moonlightbrewing.com.
Moonlightbrewing.com.
I hate saying that. I try to stay a few, you know, centuries back.
Brian Hunt, thank you very much for stopping in. You listening to George Bright, sitting in for Pat Thurston on News Talk 1350 KSRO.